I'm Lauren from Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
This is Gemma Redgrave, and you're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything in the Doctor Who spectrum. We invite you to join us each week for discussions ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi and beyond. Your GPR staff are Jay Witten.
You see how clever I was there? You make that connection? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Keir Hansen.
Proactive. I'm making up words as I go here.
And Haley Malley.
Hey, that wasn't exactly what I was going to say at all, Jay. Thanks.
Oh, and
spoilers.
We do occasionally discuss recent news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired in their home territories. But don't worry, if we dip too far into the future, we'll give you fair warning. Welcome to episode 242 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where, having watched more tennis commentary than we thought our minds could tolerate, we are now elated to watch a single minute in which our new Doctor looks us straight in the eyes. So this is your warning, kids. There are massive spoilers ahead. We are running all the way home with this news. I am your host. My name is Keir, and joining me, as always, in the GPR studios is my partner in time, Jay. Jay, how are you tonight?
My neck's a little sore from watching the bouncing ball, but I'm good.
and sitting there, slightly levitating, roughly 6 to 7 inches off of her chair, is Haley. Haley, what's up?
I have many thoughts and many feelings to share.
Opinions! Now, also joining us for this momentous occasion are the hosts of fellow podcast Dr. Hooch, Danica, and Brandon. Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Hey.
All right. Jay, we've got a lot to cover tonight. Haley, we've got tons going on, but just for those who have just emerged from their small moss-covered cave, what's going on?
Well, there was an announcement, and this week we began with that surprising announcement. Just as filming wrapped on the Christmas episode with Peter Capaldi, BBC is going to reveal the identity of our 13th Doctor right after the Wimbledon men's finals. So we all had to watch the sports.
Yeah, hockey.
Yay, yeah. Sports ball.
Men's, good times for all.
Men's finals, guy. Get it? The men's finals.
Men's finals.
Wink, wink.
Well, with a quiet minute, a single short minute, we learn that the next incarnation of the Doctor will be none other then you have been spoiler warned, Jodie Whittaker. Won't River be surprised?
Well, I guess the obvious thing that one of the first emergences from when Twitter essentially just dissolved and started to remember how to type again was they needed to make sure that they knew exactly who they were referring to. Jodie is not, she's a pretty recognizable name in certain circles, certain viewing audiences. But just to recap for everybody, what would be the best way that we can summarize how somebody who sees her in some of the promo shots says, why does she look familiar?
She's one of the 15 British actors.
Oh, right. She's number like 12, right?
I'm sorry. No, she's number 13.
I get Come on. It.
So obviously one of the places people are going to recognize her most readily from is she's actually a Broadchurch alum.
Yes.
So you know, surprise, surprise. Chibnall brought somebody that he's worked with before.
Hmm. She's now the third Doctor in Broadchurch, correct?
First, second,
third?
The guy in season one who was recast to play the first Doctor, right?
Oh yeah. Was David?
Oh, right, because he was
David Bradley. Yes,
David.
Exactly. Yes, okay. Yeah, David Bradley was in.
Yeah.
Had an excellent role in that. But yeah, so as far as coming from Broadchurch, you know, there's obviously advantages to having worked with Chibnall and company. I'm assuming he's bringing a lot of his sort of core team with him, just as Moffat is taking all of his core team over to Sherlock right now. But is everybody? How many of us have actually watched the Broadchurch series?
Before today, I hadn't. Season one.
Okay, so the important season.
Yeah.
Okay, Haley.
It was amazing. I do mean to finish it, but I was brilliant.
Yeah. Haley, you said you just started today?
Yeah, I saw 4 episodes, so I'm really depressed now. Thanks, guys.
No, that's why we're here, to get drunk and happy. It's pretty much a given. Jay, have you watched any of Broadchurch?
I've seen bits and pieces of some episodes. Yeah. I've never actually sat down and watched the whole. It's on my list.
Mm. No, and it's understandable. I mean, it's just something now, as a result of, you know, well, the first season being as impressive as it was, it got the attention to be come over to the this side of the pond as Grace Point and so on. Mm-hmm. Has all of its, you know, all of that intensity that has made it, you know, the stuff of cult legend at this point. But as far as her role within it, Jodie Whittaker's role as Beth, the in season one, she's the mother of the murdered child that becomes the core of the entire first season. You know, and it follows her family and everything that they're going through. So obvious advantages to seeing her emotional range, her ability to both draw empathy and express empathy for other characters, because even though she is this character going through all of this traumatic ordeal, she's still trying to hold a family together, trying to remain a functional part of the community and the village that she lives in. So a great role for her, really gave a great opportunity. Jay, you had noted, and I'm hoping you've seen this. I know I've watched it a couple of times. It's been a few years, though, since I saw Attack the Block.
Yeah.
All right. I almost forgot she was in it.
Well, I mean, to be fair, it's kind of John Boyega's movie. Like, yes. He would arguably be the star of this movie. So, yeah. You know, a little bit of experience dealing with the aliens before going over to Star Wars.
Just a bit. But as cast through a like a Cornetto trilogy type lens.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
It also had a very young Firestorm in it.
That's true.
Oh, I was wondering why he looked so familiar.
Yeah. Weird, yeah.
With I mean, this was one of the, I will warn people in advance, if you are a stateside or I should say at least Northern American viewer who finds that the really thick regional accents on some British television shows and films might make you reach for the subtitle button, get your thumb ready.
Yeah.
Because this one, everyone's really excitable. It's a very localized accent being used for this apartment block.
Also a lot of their local slang.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It took me about 20 to 30 minutes into the movie before I could really say that, okay, I'm picking up at least 80% of the dialogue here.
Yeah, you just gotta, you really have to tune your ear. I will note, though, I was just watching, I know that as we were getting really invested in Broadchurch, I was trying to find out other things that a lot of the other cast have done. Well, you know, Tennant and Coleman notwithstanding, and came across... he's never gonna make it. The guy doesn't shave, his horrible neck beard. But she did a film last year called Adult Life Skills.
Mm.
Really kind of quirky indie comedy where she plays somebody who's, you know, she's cresting on her 30th birthday. She's one of a twins, and she had just lost her brother within the last year, and they were like consummately, like almost professionally immature. Like their relationship with one another was one where they were never going to grow up because they meshed so well. And after losing him, she was kind of floundering, living in a shed out in the garden with her parents and things, and just didn't really develop the kind of skills to be able to cope with things like grief and loss. But it's this really kind of endearing comedy, and I just started watching it again tonight. I highly suggest tracking it down, just to be able to see her comedic chops as well as her, you know, her dramatic or more, you know, thought-provoking or heart-tugging roles. So, because there's a decent body of work out there. I mean, her IMDb is pretty thick, you know, both television and cinematic work. But this one being so recent can kind of give you a touch point for exactly where she is right now with what she's bringing to the screen. So, Adult Life Skills.
Interesting.
Is that streaming anywhere?
I haven't found it yet. I had it already.
Okay.
But it was a from a production company called English Creative. So it wasn't like Focus Pictures or anything that usually kind of hits the Netflix circuit and that sort of thing. So I have to check around. I honestly don't know. Maybe Amazon Prime has picked it up. Except, sorry, Canada.
As we are fancy streaming devices, your Hulus and your whatnots.
We like our shadow puppet theater, damn it. But so and as Jay had noted through some information, he was doing some backstory checking that she is married to an American actor. So right. Do you think that might actually play into having any kind of a? Well, we're going to get to this. We're going to get to a whole theorization about what she can bring to the role. Do we want to actually address fan reactions?
Yes, yes.
Let's get the rough stuff out of the way, shall we? Because I want to maintain positivity here, and I'm not going to let a bunch of butthurt, you know, ancient fanboys. Whiny.
Girls can't travel through time.
Time travel is for men and men only. That was my favorite quote of the last 24 hours.
We're going to have a TARDIS full of bras.
It's right there in the title. Oh, yeah. Doctor.
Right. Like women can't are be doctors. Doctors.
It's not Nurse Who.
Yeah, she's going to spend the first three episodes telling people it's not Nurse Who.
If she's traveling through time, how did she know it's her time of the month?
No.
Whoever said that, go sit in the corner and think about what you've...
I think there have to be more corners in this world.
Yeah, I think that's the problem, is that they've been spending too much time alone in a corner, and they lack the interpersonal skills to realize that you know, the world has evolved.
I suppose it's the one good thing about global warming is we can set them off on an ice floe. Like, just fill one up and then push it off.
A big one down in Antarctica.
Oh, yeah, we've got a large iceberg that's got their names etched all over it. Wow. So I mean, as we've so often seen, you know, we get a major event like this, and the old guard gatekeeping fan base feels that it's important to rail against the tides of change. Would you say, though, to a certain degree, that we have been groomed for this more so,
like,
within the last couple of years?
For it or to hate it?
For it. So that, you know, okay. So the writing was on the wall.
I don't know.
I'm kind of like, everyone's saying, like, well, it's time. It's been time for 50 years. Like, there was no reason before now that the it couldn't have been.
There's interviews with all kinds of the former doctors saying, like, do you think it's time for the doctor to be a woman? And, like, apparently even going back to the second doctor.
There's
evidence of them saying, like, yeah, absolutely.
Right. Well, I mean, there was...
We've got the Time Lord General, who was, you know, clearly switched genders in regeneration. Mm-hmm. We've got Missy, who, you know, so... And then even the line from the last episode of the series where the Master is like, is the entire future going to be girl? And the Doctor says, we can only hope.
Yeah.
You know, so it's been this constant thing of, guys, it's coming. It's going to happen eventually. Prepare yourselves.
Yeah.
This was an inevitability.
Here's a bit of a question. With something like this, do you think they actually cast her along with Chibnall? They got them as a pair because you have these two people who worked well together on one of the biggest television shows that was around. And, you know, you kind of lay the breadcrumbs, like you're saying, and the BBC sort of went into this with, let's put our absolute best foot forward because we know the knives are going to be out.
It's my understanding that they pick Chibnall and then Chibnall gets to pick his doctor. And he had the intent from the outset to pick a woman to play this doctor.
Interesting.
I know. Yeah. I read that somewhere today.
Yeah, it was something he's been keeping it very shtum. I mean, in fact, he's been leaving a lot of red herrings around prior to this point to try and throw everyone, but had said, you know, when he didn't think he was going to be able to get clearance for half the things that he's been pitching, and he has not met an ounce of resistance yet. They have fully invested in him and trust him to his vision, at least so much of it that he's shared with them, that they're in, you know, whole hog right now. So I don't know. I guess I could see whether it was sort of a package thing or whether it was something where he made that, maybe he took the mantle and said, all right, I just want you to know that I have a short list. And these are the individuals on it. If you have an issue with any of them, please say something now, because this is going to be contingent on my decision. Now, this is clearly hypothetical. I don't really know. But I honestly, I agree with you that there's that once you've spent so much time working with certain actors that respond so well to your particular style, to your particular approach, to your passion. And I've seen all three seasons of Broadchurch, and while I'm not a huge fan of all three seasons, I think it kind of has a little bit of diminishing returns because the first season is so damn powerful. It's kind of hard to achieve that again and again. But with her particular role and seeing how she evolves, that's something where I have a feeling that there's been a lot of rapport between them of him saying, all right, we're going to go somewhere new with Beth. You know, I want to see if we can do something with her. And she rises to meet it every single time. So that must have been some sort of certainty in his mind that this is an actor whom I connect with, who I know that I can draw great things from. And going into a titular role like this, where you have to be so many things, there's so many facets to the Doctor, and each one of them is critical to the fan base. You know, has to be brilliant, has to be quirky, has to be unpredictable, has to be warm when necessary, has to be cold when necessary, has to be downright scary when angry. You know, all these things that he looked at her and said, I've personally witnessed you do this for me in our body of work. So I'm so thoroughly pleased with this. And I didn't even have her on my radar. I mean, even up to today, like going to bed last night saying, holy crap, what's this going to be, after watching what was going to be Endless Hours of Tennis, which didn't really end up being endless. Thank you, Roger Federer, for smashing through this thing in like near record time.
He wanted to know just as bad as the rest of us, apparently.
And then the announcers would talk.
Great motivation, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah,
yeah, to be honest, I kept myself out of anything. I didn't want to know. I like being surprised. And the whole thing with the bookies and the ratings and people guessing, that's fine and good for other people. Yeah. But I would see the occasional article where, of course, someone's like, well, Idris Elba for everything. And I'm like, that's cool. But, you know.
Yeah.
Like maybe Idris Elba like 10 years ago, because I honestly think he's like too big right now. But anyway, I digress. I generally just kept it at arm's length because I really do like the surprise. And knowing more of her work than I did when Capaldi was cast, I'm really happy. I really like her, even though I haven't seen her in a lot of stuff. I know she could do it.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a nice point for us to kind of tip over and say, all right, there has been a lot of dissension out there. You know, if you want to go ahead and you want to read the comment trail on the Daily Mail's post, have at it. It's one of the largest chunks of salt I've ever seen. It's just bitter, bitter, hateful. And at the end of it all, there are a few people in there that will interject every once in a while and say, I'm really sorry that you've taken so much offense to a decision made on a show that is intrinsically about reaching people through intellect, embracing change, and remaining adaptive to the environment and the society that you find yourself in. That's really unfortunate. I guess we must have been watching a much different show for the past 53 years.
Yeah.
And it just gets drowned out by all of the vitriol. But thankfully, I think a lot of that is kind of isolated. I was noticing earlier today that after a little bit, you know, the initial wave of everybody screaming out at once, that the positivity was the stuff that continued. Like my feed is still, you know, racing by right now.
Yeah.
With people thoroughly pleased and talking about the fact that, you know, saying things like, my daughters are now suddenly interested in the show that I've been trying to introduce them to for 20 years and so on and so on and so on. Or like something, Jay, you can probably attest to this. You know, you think about, what is this going to do now for us to show this program to our sons? I mean, this is critical. It hit me like a ton of bricks this morning. Like I've got an infant, a little boy in the household that within a couple of years, you know, by the time he's, you know, starting to be cognizant at all of what he's watching in programming, and I want to introduce him to the Doctor, I can introduce him to her.
Yeah.
And it would be no different experience as far as just saying that this is a character that mom and dad absolutely love. This is a show that you, whether you realize it or not, you were dyed in the wool before you were born, pal.
Exactly.
You were doomed to this fandom. And this is the norm now. This is our new norm. Finally. Yeah.
Well, one of the great things was, like, I mean, granted, I went and saw Wonder Woman, and immediately, like, that weekend, grabbed my kids. I said, no, you're all going to come and watch this movie. This is important. Yeah. And so, you know, talking to my kids today, my six-year-old, who, you know, can tell you, I don't think he knows everybody's name, but if you put up a list of all the actors who have played the Doctor, he's like, that's the Doctor. That's the Doctor. That's the I know grown people that can't understand that concept. Mm-hmm. But I told him, I was like, hey, this is the new Doctor. And I showed him a picture of Jodie Whittaker, and he was like, oh, cool. When does she start? And it's absolutely no problem with it at all.
Out of the mouths of babes.
Yeah. You know what would have been great is if they'd made her a redhead for the part. So then all the people that were like, no, they have to give us a ginger doctor. It's like, hey, we did. Shut up.
Here's your ginger.
I don't understand that. Her hair is naturally auburn. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Based on what you see her in, based on how many years back you go in her CV, you know, she looks more or less a redhead. Why do you think they changed it for this role? Just to shake a fist at the ginger haters.
The announcement was more just a thing of like, hey, here's the actor playing the Doctor now. The outfit isn't going to be her outfit. Mm. So the hair may change as well. We don't know. That may have just been like, hey, we need to film this thing so that we can air it. Yeah, your hair's going to be fine that way.
Or it could be like a penalty where she starts out blonde and her red roots start to show. And by her third season,
she literally just changes her mind because it can happen.
Yeah, River did that.
Yeah,
River changed her hair like 17 times and it was great.
Yes, but then you're going to have all the haters who are going to be like, oh, so now this is just a show about changing your hair color again. So, because they're going to have so many things to talk about.
But you know what? I don't understand what show they're watching.
Yeah. I feel like the haters are the same ones that are always hating. Like, there are so many people I know that call themselves fans of the show, and they're like, yeah, but I haven't watched it in like 10 years because it's dumb now.
Yeah.
Like, exactly, what show are you a fan of then?
Exactly.
Like, why are you even still here? Just go.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like, we've had, admittedly, some very negative things to say about the last few seasons.
Yeah.
But we still love the show. We're trying to come at it not from a place of negativity, but from a place of love, where we know it can be better and it deserves to be better. And I admittedly know that a lot of people have loved the last couple seasons. I'm definitely trying to be different than just like, well, it sucks. Okay, well, why does it suck and how can you make it better? Yeah. And is it literally just something that you're feeling, or is it a problem on a mass scale, a la early Capaldi, sexism towards Clara?
Oh, goodness.
I know, I won't get into it, don't worry. But like, that's kind of what Dr. Hooch has tried to be. And like the sludge I saw today, I was just like, you've probably been watching the show longer than I've been alive. It doesn't justify how much hatred you're spewing right now just simply because she's a different gender. Like, there were so many people that, you know, they pulled the SJW card. They were like, oh, it's just for, like, you know, they were basically saying like, oh, it's a play.
Pandering.
They're just doing it for, mm-hmm. It's pandering. Yeah. And I think every time someone says that, I think women are over half of the entire population of the entire world. So like, is my existence pandering somehow?
Yeah, I'll have 53 years of being the Doctor, a concept that's literally built to change actors with every switch, basically. Mm-hmm. And thinking about that concept logically, even if you become a new person every time you regenerate, just by the laws of actual nature.
Flip a coin really 13 times, 13, please.
Dude, yeah.
I was really worried, based on like all the betting pools and all that kind of stuff, that it was just going to be another white guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is the worst possible thing they could have done.
Yeah. Well, we had a lot of, we've got a lot of friends within the hardcore Whovian circles who had said that, you know, as painful as it may sound, they would actually admit to that they would get to the point where they're hate watching. And that's,
I have been there.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
It's not great. I know.
Yeah. See every Mark Gatiss episode, pretty much.
Yes. Thank you. Sorry. I just needed that.
Whew, at least we can all unite in our hatred of Mark Gatiss. Well, I guess to one of the things that I wanted to kind of throw to everyone is that, all right, so as I was saying, there's the there was the wave of global gasp, and then the happy people said their happy things, and the angry people said their angry things, and then after a while, the angry people ran out of the ability to hit cut and paste and just repeat what they were saying over and over again, and the happy people had way too many positive things to say. No, here's systematically a reason why we should be pretty pleased with this, and they were burying the unhappy people. And I would assume that within a certain number of days, we'll reach a sort of an equilibrium where everybody says, okay, now what? I don't really want to get to the now what phase just yet. I want to just sit back and enjoy this, personally.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is something, this is goddamn momentous, and it doesn't, and I know, I saw it within 6 minutes on my Twitter feed of people saying, well, what gender is the companion going to be? Stop.
We're not
just
there
stop.
Yet.
Yeah.
And it actually occurred to me, so this is what I wanted to ask you. Do you think that there would be a benefit to having the because of the fact that this is such a shift, and it's gonna require for all fans, whether they are new to the program, whether they're really eager to see this, whether they're really reluctant to see this, it doesn't matter where they are in the spectrum, it's going to take some time to get accustomed to what will be a fundamental kind of change in some aspects of the way the show has been portrayed. Do you think that there may be some advantages to the Doctor running solo for a while, at least initially? Meet them, get to know them.
Right.
I don't think that's a good idea, because we've always been told how bad it is when the Doctor's by himself.
Yeah.
And the fact that the Doctor is a woman now doesn't change the fact that the Doctor should not travel alone. Bad things happen when the Doctor travels alone for too long.
Especially after a loss like Bill, because they've gone through such loss. And, of course, directly after you lose a companion, you just travel alone and you mope around and maybe commit some, be okay with murder. You know, like you just get to that darker point.
Yeah, a little genocide here and there.
Typically around Thanksgiving time, you know.
Tumblr triumphant stuff, yeah.
Yeah. Yikes.
But, well, here's, that's actually a really good point, Danica. And I'm wondering, so, but we still have the Christmas episode floating out there. Which, whatever plot line that follows, and if you want to follow the rumor mills about what's going to be going on in there, you can go ahead and do that. There's some really icky spoilers out there right now, which you can go ahead and chase down if you choose to. But regardless, that could be something where we are picking up in the Doctor's timeline maybe 6 months from now, 6 years from now, or however long. So he could have had some time to travel alone and go dark. And the Christmas episode, with all of its good feels, may be his moment to step out of that dark path and end on something while it's his closure, her introduction, is a positive thing. You know what I mean?
I think it's
Yeah.
Well, and here's something I've been thinking of. The rumor going around lately is that we're not going to get a new season until 2019.
Right. So that's what they were saying when Chibnall first came or was announced to come on board.
Right. Dumb. So that means we see Capaldi's exit this year in the Christmas special. We would probably get a 2018 Christmas special with the new Doctor. Mm. I could see her not having a new companion yet for that special. So we see her by herself for a while. And then when the new series starts, we see the Doctor's new companion.
Yeah.
Or what if it's even not a new companion? What if they do wind up bringing Bill back and she's like, wow, you really took that whole girl my own age thing comment seriously, didn't you? And then we have...
That would be fantastic. I would love to have another season with Bill.
I mean, because the way that they left it off, they could very easily do that. So
there's a lot of there's a lot of loose companions out there right now.
This is true.
Clara and me and Bill and I always forget
Heather.
Her name. Heather. I always call her Space Girlfriend.
In my head canon, they're all four in the diner together.
That's what I'm saying. So you've got the 13th Doctor walks into a abandoned companion support group.
Yes.
And says,
please,
I'm just here to say I'm sorry. I'm so, so sorry.
I would pay money to hear her say that. That would just bring me such joy and crush my heart.
So yeah, but there's something I was thinking about that regarding the 2019 delay, you know, and I do understand that because production quality has gotten to the point and we're dealing with such a massive overhaul or reset as far as cast and crew, everything down to your set designers. We were actually tweeting back and forth today with Haley Neubauer, who does the costume design or has done through the last few seasons. And because we were asking her about the jacket that Jodie's wearing in the little minute short, and said, oh, is this another one of your kind of custom works? She said, I wasn't involved in that look. I don't really know. Mm-hmm. I didn't really have the heart to ask her, are you involved in Doctor Who going forward? Because that is typically kind of a position that you might see rotate with a showrunner. But but
I almost wonder if it was just her and Chris Chibnall out in the woods somewhere with a camcorder.
Who was it? It was either Richard Dinnick or maybe Barnaby Edwards. Somebody had tweeted out there a little earlier today that the one shot, the TARDIS that they had overlaid in that final shot, looking mm-hmm. just over the moss there, was like the second or third image that shows up on Google image search when you search for TARDIS. Like, wow. It is that picture. It was like the one that kids get done in a 5-foot vinyl to stick to their wall kind of a image. Like, you're being awfully critical of the appearance of the TARDIS right now. That's what you're focusing on? That of everything? And you're picking on the angle of the TARDIS? But so be it. I wanted to ask, though, because I think Chibnall has kind of established to a certain degree, he knows how to work cliffhangers, obviously, and he knows how to work tension with his viewing audience. Could this possibly be, especially because of the fact that we've got a couple of years to see, well, year and a half or so to see this grow, that we may get that, Jay, you and I had talked a lot about this, the absence of the little webisode teasers.
Yeah.
The interstitial ones between seasons, so that we would get a little something about, you know, here's what's, if you wanted to know what the doctor does on a daily basis, here's the doctor brushing their teeth, here's the doctor, you know, trying to figure out where they left their pen, here's the, you know, just these little moments, but it's something for us right. to enjoy. I wouldn't be surprised if Chibnall would be the type to say, you know what, Moffat had promised going into series 10 that he was going to give us more web-released content and never did, I'm going
to
do it.
And, you know, that would be a great way to fill the time between now and 2019. You know, just every couple months be like, hey, here's a handful of things that we've shot, you know, between takes that, you know, just a little kind of, you know, and it doesn't even have to be anything with the new Doctor. Just, you know, anything going on in the TARDIS or something like, or, you know, stuff that people are doing.
Meet the makeup team.
Or, these are the people that the doctor ran into and you just missed her. She just left, but this is the thing that happened. And, I mean, there's tons of things that you could do that would make the wait far more bearable, because at this point, the gap that we're facing is just, it's insurmountable.
This is one of the longest.
Do you think they try and do something like they did with Class? Because I feel like that's why Class existed in the first place.
Well, didn't they say that they were rumoring another spinoff?
That's probably, like, they probably would have just ran a second series of Class.
Except they decided to ruin that.
Yeah.
Yeah, screw the pooch on that one.
Paternoster Gang, come on, it's not too late.
Yeah, I would watch the heck out of that.
I said this back when we watched Deep Breath the first time, that I thought the way they played it, it made it seem like Vastra had experienced a regeneration before, and wouldn't it be wonderful if she was there, like a younger version of her was there when Capaldi's doctor regenerated.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
So she has seen the doctor regenerate from man to woman. So seeing him regenerate from a young guy to an old guy, she's like, yeah, he changed a little bit.
That would be something. Yeah. Again, it's another one of those things where who's to assume that anything that we witnessed at this point is in any sort of chronological order?
Right. I mean, we can have the 13th doctor being the one that introduces Vastra to Jenny, because, you know, Vastra is all kinds of into the doctor. And she's like, no, you need to be distracted. Here, take the pretty thing over there.
Jenny getting upset. No, you sketch me. I'm the one who gets sketched. Nice. So the something I think the thing that's gonna keep me happy and continue to kind of pull up my heartstrings as I fall asleep tonight is the fact that I have seen at least a dozen different people who do not know each other. These are from separate threads on different social networks. The completely unrelated have all recognized the fact that they've said, you know, I'm seeing some negativity out there. But for every one person that has said something about how this has ruined their show, there are 3 to 5 to 10 women, young women, little girls who have said, ooh, this is something that I want to watch now. I want to see. And the fan base could potentially explode.
Mm-hmm. We're coming at this from obviously like the comics industry because in addition to doing Doctor Who, Danica and I make our money running a comic store.
What do you do for money, really?
This sort of idea of fan base expansion, it's basically recognizing that this specific audience that's been marketed to forever, it's kind of reached a tipping point where, at the very least, a lot of them are getting old and dying, or you know, your life priorities change. Like, so for especially for comics, that core audience shifts, and so it's finally like, unfortunately, it's because they have to find the new audience. They're trying to find the new audience. We kind of push in that direction just because, you know, it's always great for everybody to have something that they might enjoy. This definitely feels like BBC sort of recognizing, we've been marketing to this audience for 53 years. What happens if we market to a smaller chunk of that audience, but this giant audience that exists outside of the bubble?
Right. Or that we've only been catering to by trying to throw them, you know, relationship interests or eye candy every once in a while for those people that are attuned towards, you know, they want to see, you know, the Tenant faces and those sort of things. And we've been going at that audience for more of through a very specific intent, rather than saying, you know, we want to show you the iconic roles that you can emulate, that you can identify with, that you can that you can feel proud of, that you can look and you can look at the screen and say, that's me, I can see that now. And for all of these outrageously butthurt gatekeeper fans that have said that this is going to be the death knell of the show, I can understand that you've had your head in the sand for some time, but just look out there and look at the people who are so excited about this right now.
Oh yeah.
And the fact that, you know, we're seeing this mentioned, at least here in the States, on national news circuits right now. This is making the evening news for a British program. There is an audience that says whether they want to watch it and see, and I don't want to talk about there's going to be an elephant in the room, or at least a gorilla there. But for the people that want to see how well it succeeds, there's an aspect. I really hate to bring this up, but this is really kind of the forum for it. Someone, a friend of mine, brought this up tonight, that if, just as with Capaldi's era, when they made a decision to go with an older doctor, and everyone said, you're going to totally shake your fan base. People are going to walk away. They're going to run away in droves because they can't identify with the doctor, and you've been handing them Eccleston and Tennant and Smith, and these are people that are more of the demographic of your viewer. Well, clearly only 49% of the demographic of their viewer, but that's regardless. But the truth of the matter was that they were, their point was that with the decisions of the creators to present the Doctor in this particular role, with the audience responding one way or the other to this, if you don't give them the opportunity, they're going to put, with Capaldi, they, if for the people that walked away, they put their blame not on Peter, because they said, oh well, he's a wonderful actor, the writing was garbage, the Moffat's an ass, or whatever the case was, and they were blaming the BBC.
It's us. Can you not subtweet us directly on the podcast?
I try to refrain comments because I like you kids.
No, it's okay.
No, it's fine.
The flip side of it was that in this case, now if this does not crush from viewership, from the failing numbers of the Capaldi era and so forth, that they're going to blame her.
Like, we told you you can't have a female doctor.
Right. And that's, I think that's what's getting to me right now.
Yeah. I have the exact same concerns I did going into the Wonder Woman movie. Like, it's not enough for this to be a decent movie. Like, it has to absolutely destroy everything, or it's women can't be in action movies. Women can't lead a superhero movie. It's the same thing. Like, she can't just be a good doctor. She has to be, like, the best doctor ever, or it's women can't be the doctor.
Right.
What calms me a little bit seems to be the culture around this, seemingly from the BBC, and, you know, you're talking about the Wonder Woman movie. Like, the biggest worry there is you could tell by that corporate structure, by the way that the Hollywood system runs, that, yes, if Wonder Woman didn't hit, like, that would have tanked a lot of things for here. But the BBC seems to be cognizant of long games instead of, like, the short term, like, we're gonna do this now. That's why they don't run on the American schedule of, all right, like, 22 episodes, like, let's get this out, and it happens yearly. And, you know, if they do put it out in 2019, it's because they want all the pieces in place instead of just shoving it out the door. Mm-hmm. At the very least, that it seems more like a company that, if the numbers aren't at the highest peak or whatever, but they're still doing great in terms of what they're asking for, they'd be like, awesome, because it's not just numbers for them. It's this culture. It's this merchandise. It's this entire new audience that they're opening up for, even just monetary, outside of it airing on television.
I can't even imagine the merchandising. This is going to be a juggernaut. I can't,
like, from that standpoint alone, they're going to see this as a huge success.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can't wait until the day when I can, like, walk through a Target and like breeze really quickly past the girls' clothing section and walk through, and I'm here in New England in the United States, and I'm walking through a Target and I will see Doctor Who merchandise being targeted towards, you know, the 10 to 12 girl crowd. And I can't wait, because that's like, okay, we finally, this is it. We're in the bedrock now. There's no shaking it. Well, and I agree. Yeah. BBC does play the long game. They're the types where they will, I mean, hell, they've got a lot of series that are still in the air that I thought they should have pulled the plug on a long time ago, because they, but that's what they do. They know, well, we've still got viewers, we're still making money on this, people are still paying for their licenses to watch this, you know, this crankety old show or this other thing, or to watch this actor until they finally can't speak any longer or what have you. This is calculated, and I think it's a brilliant move.
Well, you know,
go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, even if there's, and I challenge anyone, if you have a valid concern about the show, bring it forward, because all I've heard so far is just whining. Oh, they changed my show, and there's no, it's ruined it. And once I hear one valid argument about why this has damaged the show, I will give you all the credit in the world. But the thing that gets to me is, even if you have, like, what you consider valid concerns, there's a video that I have watched probably 5 or 6 times today, and I'll see if I can find it to include in the show notes. But it's this little girl watching the reveal, and this girl that you've probably, you know, has been involved in the show, has enjoyed it. You know, she's there watching the reveal, and the moment that the reveal happens, just her face lights up. Her whole world has changed at this point, because her hero looks like her now. And it's just, she's like, oh, she's a girl. And she gets so excited. And it's like, if for no other reason, just that girl, this made it worth it. Just to see that kind of reaction coming from females who haven't been able to have that kind of role model on TV, that makes it worth it right there. I'm sorry if you're butthurt and your show has changed somewhat, because, you know, it's never changed before.
I think one of the, and I hate to keep dwelling on the negative ones, because it's just, well, you know, why do you want to give that the credence? The one of the worst things I saw today was from Ian Levine, record producer, Yeah. Did you, you saw this one as well?
I saw. He was using his all caps in a screeching manner.
Yes, yes.
And quite. I had no idea who he is, but I quote tweeted him on Dr. Hooch with no regrets.
Yeah. if you're really curious, go out there. It's spelled exactly as it sounds. Ian Levine. You can let him know that we pointed you over to him, because as I saw the tweet and I started seeing the responses, we're seeing friends of ours like, oh, there's Andy Hicks saying, you know, responding to this horrible thing, because he basically just said that his and these are his words, kills the show. He wants nothing more to do with it. He hates Chris Chibnall. And on. And this was.
Did he say anything about his lawn?
No. But this is the individual who, for those who are unfamiliar, has been rumored to be holding on to a number of the lost episodes.
Oh,
yeah.
That sounds like a tool.
And this is probably one of the fancies himself powerful, because whether he has any film canisters or not, everybody believes that he does. So this has given him more than his 15 minutes, and it's time to turn the lights off and you know, take his microphone cord away and so on. So, but the fact that people pay attention to him when he makes these kind of statements, I love the fact that with this. And I've seen this thing get quote responded to hundreds of times today. And there are like 250 replies that are all basically just kind of shutting him down. And about 80 people that said, oh, I totally agree with you. And I'll see you, next Sunday for our D&D match and blah, blah, blah. But this is indicative of the sort of thing where we can do so much better than this.
Mm-hmm.
So much better than this. We've proven ourselves better than this. The conventions that we go to and the people that we interact with and the panels that we see people get so passionate about. And Danica, Brandon, I mean, this is the nature of, you'll admit that, at times you can be kind of negative about the show that you're witnessing, but you're doing it because you love it so much that you feel that it's your place to say, I love this so much, I want to tell you why this rattles me. I want to explain to you why this gets my dander up, because I have so much emotion and I care so much about this content. But that's the difference. The fact that you can admit that you can say that this is something that it means the world to me, and this one little piece of it kind of bugs me, and I want to take that apart for a moment because I'm holding the show to a high standard because I care about it so much. But then when an event like this happens, you can say, all right, this is momentous, and well, for everybody that's saying this is the worst thing to ever happen, it hasn't happened yet. She's been on screen in front of a TARDIS. No, I'm sorry, in front of a computer-generated TARDIS impression that was apparently taken from Google Images search for all of 17 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
She pushed her hoodie down, and you're all over her.
Yeah, but she
her.
Did it wrong.
Ugh. Yeah.
The but doctor would
did
never.
It as a woman.
See, that was her problem. It's she's existing as a woman. That's where she went wrong from minute one.
Everyone knows the doctor would have used his penis to push down the hoodie.
Yeah. I mean, I it definitely goes back to the little girl in the video. And I honestly want to just shout at those people, then the next doctor is not for you. And that's okay. I want to point at a beautiful little girl who's so excited and be like, that's for her. The show is for her. And you know what? You can go away. And it's okay. Because, even if it's, Jody is 2 to 3 years older than me. She, I can't say she looks as me. She's actually an actress, so she looks like a beautiful actress, and I look like a human being. But
she can play you in the Lifetime version of your life.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yes, please. Okay. If she can do a Canadian accent, we're good to go. But she, there's a doctor that looks like me, and I am over the moon about that. But even if the show ends up being more for people that are 10 years younger than me, 20 years younger than me, I am more than okay with that, because I want to share that with them. And that's what I've only ever wanted to do with Doctor Who and the Yes comics. We're talking about the show. I've connected to this show in so many levels and in so many ways. that when people are like, well, you know, I don't really like Doctor Who, and or I haven't checked it out yet, and I just want to open this world to them. And I feel like with that 1 minute, an entirely new world was open to millions of girls and boys who will now have this awesome woman role model. And, you know, like, women have been raised to be okay with having male role models, and, you know, we're kind of sensitized to it, and that's fine and good, but that pendulum needs to swing around.
Yeah. And, you know, we've got a woman as the Doctor now. I would be willing to put my quarter down today. The next Doctor is going to be a man. So if you decide this Doctor is not for you, there will be another Doctor someday. And, you know, that one you can identify with.
I'm sorry, if you have a problem with the Doctor being a woman just because she's a woman, if, you know, there's going to be a new Doctor that comes around, and I hope you find that one just as offensive because you don't deserve to like this show.
Yeah. the way that I look at it, especially in terms of anger, because, like, and rightfully so, like, I feel like there's good anger and there's bad anger.
Mm-hmm.
We probably would say that because we've been very angry.
So we're clearly on the good anger side of the force.
Well, it's...
We try.
It's for us, it's a matter of where it's coming from. I would be very upset with myself if... And I've gone through some of my past interactions of me from 6 years ago on social media or whatever, just being like, you are the dumbest human being. because there is that anger that comes from good places and the anger that comes from bad places. And this is a lot of anger that is all about tearing down and saying, no, this can't happen. But there's lack of reasoning. There's lack of, it's pure and simple sexism and what have you. Whereas the reason why I feel comfortable with a lot of the talk that we've done over the past years is when we're mad about something, it's usually because if the Doctor is sitting there calling his companions fat, that's a hurtful thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're mad about stuff, I feel like if you can be mad because you believe that it can be better, that there is something that there can be good from it. Because a lot of people are angry at these commenters, like that anger isn't invalid. That's good anger at people who are being bad people.
And they're hateful.
Yeah.
And there should be shame in their hearts. we need to make sure that we wrap on positive things here. So
absolutely.
I figured, you know, when we're looking at the one of the things that I saw reiterated by a lot of people, Jay and I started touching on this a little earlier, and we've had a lot of statements from a lot of friends from other Whovian podcasts and bloggers and things that have said that this is a very important thing to introduce girls to, so they can see, you know, here's a hero that you can directly identify with, that you can watch and you can cheer for, that reminds you of what you're capable of. But this is also an intrinsically important thing for us to show to our boys as well, because of the fact that this is something where, you know, as I said, you know, if my son gets introduced to Doctor Who and I choose, for whatever reason, to say, you know, we've always had Jay and I have always had our starter sets that we use. You know, say, you know, if it's somebody under the age of 20, give them this set. If they're over the age of 30, give them this set of primer episodes or what have you. That I can now say, you know, depending on the writing, you know, depending on how it is, if they decide to do similarly to what they did with the 11th Hour or with the pilot, where it's kind of a let's reintroduce the audience to what this concept is all about. If they give Jodie one of these kind of episodes where Chibnall steps in and says, all right, here's my vision. Here's where if I were introducing my new program, for all intents and purposes, to the viewing audience, this is how I'm going to go about it. I'm going to give everybody a real synopsis of the backstory, and I'm going to run forward with this character, but I'm going to do it so that as far as anybody who's coming into this brand new, who obviously somehow did not know the history of this program, they would never have known that the predecessors had happened to be all, you know, middle-aged Caucasian male. So now we've got the opportunity to say, does this quantify as a full reset of the entire program? I mean, is it of that magnitude?
I mean, I mean, are you asking because Capaldi ended by meeting the first Doctor again? Like,
wondering
because there seems to be a circle that's completed.
You could see that. I mean, you could definitely add that to the argument, because now it's something where, you know, we've said that within this little bubble, you know, within 1 to 12, they've all been cycling around, and right around the 50th anniversary, they did this hokey little thing where they grouped them all together, and no, sir, all 13, and, you know, put them all together and did this whole thing. Well, okay, that, you know, end of part one, you know. It was a 53, 54-year run. Part one ends. Part two, she steps outside the TARDIS doors onto the mossy ground, you know. And here we go. And now it's a tabula rasa, you know, as far as that's concerned.
And we have 53 years of female doctors.
That is the dream.
You imagine?
And not all white women either.
Yeah. No.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Do we want to address? I mean, I didn't really know if we wanted to bring this into the conversation, but there were some people that said, "Yeah, well, you went with a woman, and that's great, but it's a white woman, and you didn't address people of color." And a lot of people jumped in and said, "Look, pick your battles. We're going to get there." And other people said, "Well, you know, if you're gonna jump, you might as well jump deep." And some people said, "Well, you know, go ahead."
I was going to say, let's just worry about getting rid of one group of bigots at a time. For, you know, this time it's the sexist. We can focus on the racist next time.
Yeah, you can only punch one group.
Parminda Nagra for 14. I'm putting that out there now.
Yeah, I think the way that Danica and I have sort of been approaching that is we're not the people to really speak a lot to that. Mm. And so when people do address their concerns as people of color, to like obviously share those ideas and validate those ideas in not in sort of like a popping into their ats and being like, good job. But just pushing that around and sharing that with people and allowing that to be a valid opinion. Because it is really hard, especially, you know, it's been 53 years too of people saying, we'll just wait, we'll just wait, we'll just wait. And so it's not about turns. It's about everybody else has been waiting 53 years.
Yeah.
So those feelings are very valid.
Yeah. I can see all the sides it's not even an argument. It's just an observation. But I can completely validate everybody's stance on it. And I personally, I mean, I'm in no position to be able to say anything as the token face of the status quo for the past five decades. You know, I can't say, you know, your desire to have representation is more valid than that person's desire for representation and that person over there and her over there and that person off in the shadows, because I'm the white guy who has been there saying, well, I don't understand what everybody's all upset about for so long. I'm a Pollyanna. I want everybody to be super happy about everything that I get super happy about. So that's just my nature of things. I guess I want to revel in this for a while. You know, I really want to appreciate the fact that this is a redefinition as well as a regeneration to a certain degree. And that
call it a first step.
Yeah, it's a matter of getting people to remember that this is the nature of change, and this is a program that has built itself upon inherent change and a reflection. It has been a societal commentary as much as it has been a science fiction program or anything else you want to label it over the years. And as we've said, I mean, everybody on the cast tonight has said at one point, you know, tell me when in the history of this program it has not, you know, the writers have not decided to do a degree of reflection, turning a lens back upon itself and saying, you know, look at, you know, your behaviors societally, historically, politically, over centuries or however long, and say that this is, you know, if I put it in an alien context and you say, whoa, that's horrid. And then I realize, oh God, this was based on the Orange Men, or oh, this was based on, you know, the treatment of slaves in the, you know, in the American South, or oh, this is, you know, these atrocities were things that my own grandparents might have done. They have done this since the inception. So we have been prepared for these kinds of momentous shifts forward, and it has just been a matter of saying, you know what, we can't wait any longer. This has been long overdue. So, you know, maybe six, you know, I don't want to guess how many seasons from now, they decide to do a recast, and then, you know, they go with a person of color, and it's going to be male. Okay, so now they're going to go with, I don't know.
Naveen Andrews.
Richard Iowate. I don't know. It could be anybody.
But he's got the hair for it.
Exactly. But this is a matter of now saying, you know, the idea of, as we said before, the roll of the dice, regeneration is such a random thing. Well, how random has it been? How random can it be, really? What I'm really interested to see, both from the Christmas episode and from whatever they do at the top of Series 11, is a matter of how they choose to tie in what they've been doing quite a bit lately about why does the Doctor look now like they do? You know, why this face? Who frowned me this face? Or however you want to do going backwards. Whether it's the fans interpreting it or whether it's something that's explicitly written into the script as Moffat has done. Because I love that sort of thing. That's a matter of saying, well, that's some continuity that really strikes home, because this is a matter of, this is talking to the fans who have stuck through it to say, all right, you know where they are, you know, what their recent experiences have been, and how has that driven the persona, the face that they want to put forward for the next who knows how long. That fascinates me.
Well, yeah, Brandon and I were chatting before recording tonight, and we were both getting very excited about the regeneration scene, because I'm sure Capaldi will make us all cry. But then, and we probably won't, you know, we never really get it in the Christmas episode, so we'll have that moment where she's just like, yay, and then it'll end. But like a year later and forever, we will get, you know, the... her kind of discovering herself, you know, like Matt Smith touched his hair and, you know, David Tennant wasn't a ginger. And, you know, so like, I'm very, very interested as to how that's going to go and what she's going to bring to it. Because the regeneration scene, I find, is the next Doctor, obviously the end is sad. But then you get to the happy part, the discovery part, the where is my liver, you know. So I know she's got the comedy chops. Like I've seen her range, basically, mm-hmm. and I definitely need to watch more of her stuff. But I'm very excited to see her be silly.
What I'm hoping for specifically in the regeneration scene is a variation of a simple line, which I think will strike a fairly good balance, which is basically her saying, "It's about time."
Yeah,
yeah.
And it at once addresses it without going to the full thing of where she's like touching all of her body parts, which could get very weird.
Mm-hmm. We were going to talk about the kind of persona that we might expect from her, and it's really, I don't really know if there's a way that we can even begin to anticipate that, because she's a pretty malleable actor, and she's done a pretty varied range of character archetypes. But I will say that as far as the representation, maybe aside from the persona, I'm really hoping that they don't dwell too long on really like beating the audience over the head with the fact that this is a dramatic change, so that it doesn't become a bit almost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it should be as short as possible, and honestly, almost never mentioned again.
Yeah, I hope they don't decide to make her like super maternal.
No.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could see that happening. I don't know if that's something. I mean, Chibnall is a true fan of the program, and I don't think that they could that he would allow that sort of thing to creep in.
I like the level of paternal that the other doctors have been, where he'll mention that he's had children. He doesn't want to talk about it, but he also will emotionally and physically reach out if there is a child in need. So that level was more, I know exactly what you're saying. Like you don't want basically what a lot of people are scared about, like the the Twitter haters of just like, she's just going to start crying and having her period all the time and talking about babies and like, God, no, because that's not what women are.
Always baby stuff with you.
Yeah, it's just the fact that it's been stated many times. The doctor cannot walk away from a crying child,
mm-hmm.
period.
Mm-hmm. And that doesn't need to change.
It's yeah, that's fine. I'm worried. Same like, level.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're worried that they'll...
Like, they'll bring in, like, an 18-year-old companion, and this is now the doctor's child. That's the one thing I don't want to see.
Yeah. No, I get that. I don't want that either.
Oh, no. Courtney's back.
Oh. And Artie and...
Artie and Angie Maitland.
No, thank you. I don't know. Like I see her as a very positive blank slate right now, and I'm very excited to see what she can do.
And that's the thing that we need to remember is that it is a blank slate. Like we can literally write any kind of character traits that we want on her character because we have no clue. There's nothing for us to go on aside from, you know, she pushed her hood back and looked at the TARDIS.
She has
kind
not,
of excited.
She has not uttered a line.
Yeah.
Not one.
I'm sure people are like analyzing how she put the hood back and the fact that she didn't smile when she saw the TARDIS and the key was like, it was just, it's going to happen. There's going to be think pieces tomorrow.
You know, you're so pretty. You should smile more.
Oh.
And she punched someone in the face after that line because that's the only time I would go get away with that line happening in the show.
You know, and Doctor Who is going to be really weird since you can only explore about 77% of time and space now.
Oh. Wow.
Salty. Jeez.
I would not mind if they put sexist comments like that in the show as long as she can bring the same kind of level of snark that Capaldi had in his first series.
And there's really no reason not to because the fans those would drive away already quit when they found out she was a woman.
Exactly.
I just can't wait for the arguments with the TARDIS.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's going to be great. There's such a fun pair already.
What if the TARDIS is always super cooperative now? Like, that's what
she's like, I've been waiting for you. Nobody else would listen to me.
And she just can drive it like a dream and it's just fine.
The TARDIS is like, I've been telling you for 1,000 years and you're finally listening.
She finally won't leave the parking brake on.
Or if she stops referring to the TARDIS as the old girl and starts saying that old dick or
whatever. Oh, jeez. Just she stops and asks the TARDIS, how do we get there?
Oh, she finally listens. Yeah.
She asks for directions.
Wow. Okay. We're descending into counter stereotypes here.
Terrible. So. It'll be what it will be, and we will enjoy it or we won't enjoy it. And like that's where I'm coming in with this. Like I love her. I know what her work is, but again, you know, with our podcast in the future, if I don't like her or if there's something I feel is better, I'm going to say it. I'm going to talk about it. And maybe I won't like her doctor, but that's okay. That has to be okay because not everything is for me.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't like these seasons of Doctor Who, but that's a ton of people really enjoyed them.
Right.
And that's not a wrong opinion. We just had differing ones.
And that's just it. Yeah. I mean when you get into a conversation with somebody who says, "Oh, I know that show that you're all excited about," and you say to them, "Oh, well, you know, who's your doctor?" And even if for whatever reason, if we didn't actually end up clicking with the 13th doctor, or if we really did and the person who was standing next to us didn't, there's a percentage of us that recognize the fact that you can still steer that to the positive and say, well, who's your doctor? Oh, okay. Well, my doctor is so-and-so. It's somebody totally different. But isn't that great that we both have our own doctors and we're really excited about them? And, you know, and we have this mutual affection and affinity for a program that can allow us to have that kind of connection, even though there are these intrinsic differences between these individuals who have represented the title role. Isn't that great? And conversation goes from there. I mean, that's the nature of this. So, and then at the end of the day, if it ends up meaning that a certain percentage, whatever, you know, whatever number you want to attribute that to, if you can actually quantify it, that walk away from the program and say, I can't do this. This is, I'm not even going to give it the time of day. Aren't we the better for it?
Yep.
Yeah, actually.
So,
I, you know, everybody who's willing to quit right now as soon as she's cast and hasn't seen anything.
They should do it.
I go, all right, that's fine, because like 6 months and then like a year from now, that six-year-old's going to be 7, and hopefully, her parents think she's old enough to watch Doctor Who, and she's going to be a fan for the next 53 years.
Yeah, because at this point, the only valid complaint about the new Doctor is she's replacing my Doctor. That's the only thing that you can say that makes you a decent human being.
And that's going to happen no matter who
exactly
pulled but that hood down.
Exactly.
We're laughing inside.
But definitely not on the outside.
Right.
Which is great podcasting.
That was really mean. I'm sorry.
If you can't be mean to Kier, there's really no reason to come on the show.
I wasn't trying to be punny. I was trying to be emotional.
He's a dad now. He can't help it.
My feels are valid.
Oh.
I was going to give the Dr. Hooch people a chance to plug themselves and their podcast, but now I don't know if I want to. You could probably find them in the internet if you can spell it right. Whatever.
Go on, get out of here. Yeah, I know.
On your bikes. That's it. But in all honesty, since we've had the opportunity, the pleasure for the past hour and change to be able to chat with you kids, if the folks listening in podcast land are GPR listeners and they want to hear more from you two, how can they do so?
Well, you can find us on Twitter at Dr. Hooch. That's DrWhoOch. We are not on Facebook yet, but we may be later this year. We've been told we should be. Our personal accounts are on Facebook, but not Dr. Hooch.
Yeah, our families live on Facebook.
Yeah, that's why we've been a little hesitant, but it might happen. So Twitter is where we live. We do post, we are on iTunes, but we do post to our personal blog at submetropolitan.com. So you can find episodes of Dr. Hooch and occasional writings from us and pictures of our cats.
Yeah. And you can find me personally on Twitter at Soupy Toasterson, which is soup as in the food, the letter Y. And if you have a toaster, that is your son.
And you can find me at Danica Here, DanicaHere.
We will make sure that we have those all spelled out in their entirety, including Brandon's lovely little explanation that sounds so well rehearsed. Twitter handle explanations 101.
Yep.
If you had a toaster and it was your son. Yeah. Okay. Jay, what's coming up next week?
So next week we're going to take a look at the exits that we've seen for companions. With Bill leaving recently, it just kind of brought everything to the forefront. So we're going to take a look at how things have played out for each companion as they're leaving, and whether or not we think that they've been decent exits or not.
Spoiler alert, about 95% of them would be a no response. But we will actually be joined by a friend of the cast and fellow podcaster out there, Mike Sulko, who from a couple of casts, like This Is Where It All Happens and his Whovian Game Show podcast as well. So we will look forward to another conversation with Mike next week. Danica, Brandon, thanks so much for spending some time in the studio with us and kind of just squeeing out a little bit over the announcement of our 13th Doctor.
Yeah, thank you for having us. Absolutely. This has been a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jay, you want to close us out and get us out of here for the evening so we can go back to our beverages and find out what's happened on Twitter in the last 15 minutes or so?
Oh, yeah. Well, this has been episode 242 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying... I had something. Shoot, I closed it. Crap.
Oh, great. More editing for Kier. That's awesome.
Suck it up, Buttercup. This is Jay saying that I look forward to at least the next couple months before my doctor leaves.
And this is Kier saying, "What? Oh, her? Rather eclectic person. Brilliant, but odd. Calls herself the Doctor."
And this is Haley saying, "Who run the world? Girls. We run this, mother."
See you guys next week.
See.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Forty-two times we've done this.
Maybe I've only one been here for like 160 of them.
Wow. Haley hanging her disclaimer. Just let the record show. I came late into this show.
I think I started screwing up the numbers after 110.